Coming up on episode 299 of Wheel Bearings, it's an all-interview show because we're taking the week off because Sam and his wife are hanging out on a beach in the middle of the Pacific, and we're giving Robbie and Nicole some time off. So we've got a collection of interviews that we did during the 2023 New York Auto Show, some of which have already been published on the Patreon feed for those that are supporting the show. And there's also a couple of new ones that haven't been heard yet. So first up, we've got Tom Somerville, the marketing manager for Ford Electric Enthusiast Vehicles.
So sitting here with Tom Somerville, general manager for Enthusiast Vehicles at Ford, and among your responsibilities, I believe, is the Mustang Mach-E, right?
Exactly. It's the Mustang Mach-E and working on future vehicles as well in the enthusiast space.
Electric enthusiast vehicle?
Yeah, only electric enthusiast vehicles.
Okay, so that sounds interesting. Can you give us any hints? You know, when are we going to see an electric Mustang convertible?
Unfortunately, we cannot talk about future vehicles, but just so you know that we are very committed to maintaining our presence in the overall enthusiast space.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. I mean, you know, I think the Mach-E's been a great first entry for Ford into that. You know, I think when it first came out, when it was first announced, or hinted at, actually, at the Detroit Auto Show in 2019, you know, there was some trepidation, you know, but once we actually saw it and got to drive it and everything, I think, you know, a lot of people came around on it. How's Mach-E doing in the market so far?
Yeah, Mach-E's doing very well, you know, and along with F-150 helped propel us to be the number two EV manufacturer last year. You know, we're seeing incredibly strong demand for Mustang Mach-E. We're seeing that over 70% of our customers for Mustang Mach-E are new to Ford. So it's helping grow our reach, bring more people into the showroom, and generally speaking, 96% of all of our Mustang Mach-E customers are first-time EV buyers. So really showing that this is a product that is helping us bring new people to the brand, new people to the energy type, and it really is an amazing complement for the traditional Mustang.
Okay. So, you had a really strong first, like, almost 2 years now since we started deliveries. Sales came out yesterday for Q1, slowed down a little bit from last year. Is that more of a supply issue or a demand issue?
I'd say, you know, it's very hard to look at the first quarter as being indicative of overall sales. The Mustang Mach-E plant was down for over 6 weeks as part of a refresh that we're doing at the plant. So a large part of that was we spent a large part of the year just not producing any vehicles. And part of that is because we're very quickly expanding production. Uh-huh. And by the end of this year, we'll be at a 270,000 unit per year run rate.
So, and that's between North America and China, right?
So that is just for our plant. That's the global number.
Oh, so 270,000 a year just from Quadalon?
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to double check on that.
Okay.
There are several periods of which we just went through and where the plant was down, which is heavily contributing to that overall, less than last year's sales number.
Right. And, obviously, you know, when you got production challenges like that, you know, because you're shifting things around so you can ramp up and to supply more, you're going to see some maybe hopefully temporary hiccups.
Exactly. And Lightning, the Rev C has gone through a similar shutdown and they're going to have another one as well. I mean, this is all part of the overall ramping that's taking place. The overall goal for the end of this year for all of our EVs is to be at a 600,000 per unit run rate. And this is part of the $50 billion commitment that Ford has made to accelerate us towards this all-electrified future. So end of this year, key milestone will be in total, that is globally, all products, 600,000 unit run rate. And then by 2026, to be at 2 million unit run rate across all products globally.
That's a lot of EVs. One of the things that's going to be changing this year for Mach-E and then a little bit later for Lightning is the battery situation. Currently, you're using all nickel manganese cobalt batteries, NMC batteries, but you're going to start using LFP batteries for the standard range Mustang this year. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, exactly. So we are going to be migrating later this year to LFP batteries, and for Lightning, it will be in 2024 calendar year. They're really focused on what the use cases are for customers. So LFPs will be our standard range battery only, and NCM will be used for high-performance, high-use batteries for, say, the maximum range because of the higher energy density of NCM. From a use case perspective, people who are using their vehicle for daily use, they need to be charging every single day. You know, LFP is a better chemistry, so that'd be the standard range configuration. And then again, for people who want a GT or a high series F-150 and they need to be towing or hauling, the NCM is a better choice for them. But from the customer's point of view, they're not going to be seeing the chemistry difference. They are going to be selecting them purely based off of needs. Performance versus, you know, performance slash range, or is it regular usage? You know, another benefit of LFP is being able to regularly charge to 100%, while we recommend only charging to 80% for NCM. So different use cases, yes, coming to Mach-E later this year, and then F-150 Lightning next year.
Yeah, that's one of the great advantages of LFP batteries is their durability.
Exactly.
You know, they can withstand a lot more abuse.
Exactly.
You know, so going from 0 to 100% on a daily basis if needed, that's a big difference.
Exactly. And, you know, that's also key as we see more of our customers using EVs as their only vehicle. That level of durability is key to those people. But then there's some other customers who, you know, have an EV as a second vehicle, and they have different use cases. And then the LFP might not be the best case, and that's where they might prefer an MCM. Again, under the guise of it's a performance vehicle like a Mach-E GT, or it's one of the extended range packs on either a Lightning or a Mach-E.
So one of the things that's happened over the past year with both Mach-E and Lightning, and to be fair, you know, a lot of other EVs from other manufacturers as well, is we've seen some price increases due to challenges, you know, with the battery or the battery material costs, cost of lithium, nickel, and so on. With the shift to adopting some LFP, is there a possibility we might start to see some, you know, maybe some more affordable variants of Mach-E and or Lightning showing up?
You know, that's one of the intentions as well, one of the other intentions of bringing multiple chemistries, right? Being able to diversify away from, you know, high cost, you know, rare commodities that you find in some other chemistries. And so essentially this will be part of our ability to make more affordable EVs, help drive adoption, as well as help, you know, on our path to achieving an 8% EBIT, which is one of the other goals that we've stated. You know, some of the cost changes are, you know, a function of market conditions, commodity prices, and, you know, we've seen that it goes both ways, right? So we took some price adjustments up for Mustang Mach-E, and then as market conditions have changed and we've found cost savings in other areas, we're able to bring the pricing down as well.
Okay. With the reconfiguration of the assembly plant, being able to get more scale, is that going to potentially coincide? And I don't expect you to give me specifics at this point, but, you know, will that coincide with perhaps maybe some other changes in the vehicle to help improve performance, reduce costs, you know, make it more affordable?
So, unfortunately, we can't talk about future products, but,
yeah. You know,
we are committed to maintaining this always-on mindset of continually bringing improvements. Now, you'll see that first and foremost through some of our infotainment screens, some improvements we brought to BlueCruise, specifically with BlueCruise 1.2. But from a hardware standpoint, you know, again, applying always on, there will be improvements coming, there will be changes coming to best suit what customer needs are.
Okay. Speaking of infotainment, late last week, got a big announcement from one of your competitors that they were going to be removing support for Apple CarPlay and Android Auto from their EVs starting later this year. Obviously, that's something that Ford has had in their vehicles for quite a long time. Got it today. Does Ford have a stance, and I don't know if that's something you can comment on, about whether, you know, you'll continue to support the smartphone projection in your future vehicles?
Yeah, I mean, smartphone projection we know is something that's extremely important to our customers. It's gotten to a point where some EV consumers are shopping based on availability of it. You know, in the Mustang Mach-E, we have a 15.5-inch center screen, and we have one of the largest projections of Android Auto and Apple CarPlay in it. And again, it is something that in the latest software updates, we made that projection even larger. So it is something that we know customers care about. It is something that, based on our customer feedback, we certainly want to continue including and also improving on in the future.
I'm curious, I don't know if you have, you know, any telemetry data about the way consumers actually use their vehicles for things like the infotainment, you know, or maybe some survey data. Do you find that, you know, consumers actually do use the projection system as opposed to the embedded infotainment?
Yeah, you know, I can't give you specific data on that, although we do know that customers absolutely love using it. And what
okay.
you find are customers who use it all the time. It is something that they cannot live without. And again, it comes back to the point where we've seen customers who are shopping for vehicles based on availability at some time. So, you know, for some people, absolutely love it, use it all the time. And in other people, care less about it. But it's becoming extremely more, increasingly more important feature for the customers who do highly value it.
Okay. Anything else about, the current generation of Ford EVs that people should be thinking about that you want to share right now? You know, obviously, you can't talk about future products yet, but hopefully soon. Anything else we can talk about the current generation?
Yeah, really excited to, as I was mentioning, some of these over-the-air updates coming. This is one of the first major ones for Mustang Mach-E, where you now have some improvements in the center screen, some accessibility improvements, as well as new BlueCruise 1.2. So, as you're probably aware, we launched with BlueCruise, which enables hands-free driving in pre-designated roads. And then in December, we started rolling out an update that allows you to make hands-free turns. So by activating the turn signal, the car will now switch lanes in a hands-free environment. And the car also is able to bias itself in its lane, so when it senses a vehicle next to it, we'll nudge it over in the other direction in order
that's
to...
That's a very handy feature to have. You know,
yeah.
If you're passing a big truck, give me a few extra inches.
Exactly. And so, these are the sort of features which we've heard from customers that they're looking for. Another example of that is we now have a dedicated camera button in the center screen. So, small things that customers have asked for and that we've now started to deploy over the air to our customers who've purchased our vehicle. So, just, again, this commitment to, from a software perspective, maintaining this always-on capability, listening and reacting, in a quick time frame to customer feedback.
And when can, for example, Mach-E customers expect to get that 1.2 BlueCruise update?
So some have already been getting it. It depends on a multitude of factors, including are they already receiving automatic updates, which is something we encourage all of our customers to do. So there's a couple different factors that will determine when, but the updates already started several months ago. So
okay.
They are in the process of rolling out to our customers. And BlueCruise 1.2 comes standard on every 23 model year that's already built. So
yes.
So it's been from the plan for several months and then rolling out OTA to everyone else in process right now as well.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Tom.
Cool. Thank you. It's nice meeting you. Thank you
as well.
Next up is Nicole talking with Angela Zepeda, the CMO, the Chief Marketing Officer of Hyundai America.
All right, everyone. I'm here at the New York Auto Show with Angela Zepeda, who is the Chief Marketing Officer. I got it right, because her badge literally just says HMA executive, which does not help. So we're going to talk a little bit about marketing in Hyundai. So the first thing I actually want to ask you about is something that you guys just showed off, the Disney 100 Years of Magic.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that Ioniq 5. How did that come to be?
Yeah, so that started with the partnership we have with Disney. And this is the second time we've worked with Disney, who's a great partner of ours. We started working with them a couple years ago when we launched the Tucson, all new Tucson,
okay.
In 2021. And that was a fantastic partnership. And so they came back to us when it was coming up to be the 100th anniversary of Disney, which is pretty special on their end. And so we're the auto exclusive partner. And so we work together. And that's what we love about our partnership, is that it's not an off the shelf, put a logo here, do a little, commercial there. It's really working together to collaboratively put our two brands together. And one of the things we wanted to do was to do a special edition, which we had never done before with another partner. And it's something Disney has never done.
Oh.
So it was actually Hyundai engineers and designers working with Disney's Imagineers. And together, we worked to put together a special edition Ioniq 5. It's the Platinum Edition, and it's a really nice version of the Ioniq 5. There'll be 1,000 of them, and it has really beautiful cues that have, hidden things with Disney in it. Not over the top, but it's a beautiful way to, I think, celebrate Disney. And I think the beautiful things that we have also in Hyundai, but it's a nice collaboration between the two brands. And so it's really special. We're excited.
Assuming you've taken a look at it and seen some of the details, is there any particular thing? Because there's a lot of little hidden Mickeys and stuff. Is there one thing on there that you think this is super cool, like a favorite feature for all the Disney cues?
Well, there's a couple things on the show car that unfortunately we can't bring to the production car. Like, for example, there's the LED lights in the front.
Yes.
Which we can't do for safety reasons. on the production car, but that was actually really cool.
Yeah.
But we do love the wheels, and that's a very Disney thing, is to always do a little hidden Mickey. So it's got the Mickey ear.
Yeah.
That's been designed into that wheel, and so we love that. And so it's, but there's a lot of cool little things inside the interior, and you'll get some Disney sounds, the ambient lighting. So it's just, it's got some nice things
and
in there.
And will the wheels make it into the actual vehicle? So the wheels are okay.
The wheels are
yay,
good.
So we'll have hidden Mickey wheels.
Yeah, and I love the color. I think the color it's actually a special color.
Okay.
It's gravity gold. It's a matte color. And also the interior is an interior you can't get on the car in a standard version. So,
okay.
You know, overall, I think it's going to be something that I think fans are going to love.
And what do you think makes Disney a good partner for Hyundai? Why does that work?
We love it because it's, of course, it's an iconic American brand. It's a family brand, and it's one that's genuine and true about making these big emotional moments with consumers. And that's what we want to do at Hyundai. We want to make an emotional connection too. Our brand platform is It's Your Journey. And so we just feel like together, we have this nice meld of what we want to do about, you know, really interacting with our consumers in a genuine and authentic way. And that's what Disney also does. And so together we feel like we have a nice symbiotic relationship. And so we're very happy on both ends. And so we're very excited about RAM too. And this partnership will last through the end of the year.
Okay.
And so this is just the beginning.
Oh, that's exciting. So other stuff?
Other stuff is coming.
Yes. I can't wait to see. I'm a huge Disney fan. So
great.
See a Disney car is kind of fun for me.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So you had a big day today at New York. You guys won a few things from the World Car Awards. Just a couple little important, huge awards that you won this year.
Yeah.
So it's a big day. What is your plan, you know, for the IONIQ 6 having just come out? We all just drove that. I had a chance to drive it. What's your plan in terms of marketing? How are you going to get the public to continue to go in on the idea of EVs are something I can get today and I should consider today because it's a fantastic car?
Yeah.
How are you going to market that to people?
You know, the IONIQ platform has been really interesting for us. We had the IONIQ 5 last year, and where we were a year ago, and maybe even let's say a year before that, we weren't really marketing widely that we had all fuel powertrains. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that we were being very regimented about CAFE and ZEV requirements. So we were doing a little more regionalized marketing in those states where we were really having to hit those requirements. But as it was accelerating very quickly, that EV was going to be here and going to be here to stay, we elevated that to more of a national campaign. And so at the same time, we were coming out with the all-electric platform, where we weren't just doing a derivative of electric into an already established model. So it was important for us to get not only the information out that what is electric and how does that work, but that it was coming in a really special platform. And I think where Americans were at that time were, you know, Tesla for us was an interesting breakthrough because it was giving you a version of a car that was taking away what I think EV was really missing before, which was, you know, you were sort of giving up range. You were giving up, I think, a lot of content and a lot of inconvenience, I think, came with those vehicles. But then Tesla came and was giving you range, it was giving you performance, and it was giving you everything and more you wanted in a car. But it came at a pretty high price tag.
Mm-hmm.
And IONIQ 5 is the thing that sort of gave you what you might have gotten in a Tesla 3, but at a really affordable price. And I think that's the beautiful thing about Hyundai as a company. It sort of gives you accessibility to things that maybe was affordable only to those that could afford it. And here we came now with IONIQ 6 in a little bit different package, in even more range. But really fast charging, and so I think that's really fantastic. I think we still have a job to do to let people know that it's really a lifestyle, and it's pretty easy to own an EV. Of course, on the coasts, it's really a lot of infrastructures in place, but it's getting pretty accelerated. And there's things you can do to put things in your home to help you have an easier lifestyle with EV. But again, I think that acceleration is becoming really faster to adopt. And the price is coming down, and so we see people getting really excited about it, and you know we're all in on an EV, so we're excited about what the future holds.
Now, do you think, because you have two really great cars in the Ioniq 5 and Ioniq 6, they're great EVs, they're all the things you said are 100% true, that sort of giving people what they missed in the Tesla experience, this gives them a better car experience. Do you think that there needs to be sort of, are you trying to just sell people the Ioniq 5 and Ioniq 6, or are you trying to sell an electric lifestyle in your marketing? Like, how much are you focusing on saying you can own an EV and you can live with it every day, as opposed to just you have to live in the Hyundai? Like, how much of it needs to be an education?
It's a little bit of both. So, you know, we'd love them to pick the Hyundai, but we also know there's barriers to break down. So even on our HyundaiUSA.com website, and now we're starting to feed this content to all of our dealer websites, it's a lot of, you know, educational content and information. I mean, we still get questions, and it comes through on our social feed, you know, like, can I drive my EV in the rain? You know, what happens when I wash it? And, you know, they sound like they're funny questions, but they're really honest questions. Mm-hmm. So we have to help people understand, you know, what it means to own an EV. People are asked, like, you know, what's charging like? You know, I hear I have to have an app. You know, how do I do payment? You know, what does free charging mean? Mm-hmm. What happens after that? You know, and so we have to just break down all those barriers. And so that education is part of the OEM's responsibility, because that's part of the whole lifestyle, like you said. And so we're just trying to answer the questions in the most simplified way, so it doesn't feel overwhelming to the customer. And so a lot of that is on our website, and we're trying to educate our dealers as well. So when the customer goes there, the information's available to them, and, you know, it's on the responsibility, I think, of the entire industry to make sure that the information is easily digestible to the consumer, so it doesn't feel like it's as scary or unattainable as I think a lot of people feel like it is.
Yeah, I agree with you that there needs to be an education. Every time I have an EV as a press vehicle, I get a lot of questions about whether I can use it. And during the winter, because I'm in New England,
exactly,
I took pictures of it, plugged it in the cold, and everyone thought I was going to burn my house down. I'm like, no, it's okay. It's okay with the snow.
Right.
So, and it sounds funny, but people are genuinely afraid, because you wouldn't plug a toaster in outside in the snow. Why can't you do it with your car and it's okay?
Like, exactly.
People get a little confused. Do you find that, like, they're getting that information a lot from your website, but they're also having to go to your dealers? Is there a significant attempt to get the dealers in on this so that they're able to answer these what might seem like basic questions in a way that people understand how living with an EV is?
Yeah, the dealers play a huge role in this. In fact, the dealers who sell our Ioniq line specifically, they have to be certified dealers. So there's training that's involved. They have to have the information on their websites, and that's because we want them to be armed with the right information. So when a customer comes into their dealership, they're not, you know, leaving them sort of like empty-handed with, like, well, I don't know, you know, that would be terrible. So if you're selling Ioniq, you have to have the right information at the tip of their hand. So we're providing all that content to them. Our field staff is training them, and we're just arming them with as much information as we can, and doing it in a way that makes it easy for them to translate that to the customer. So it's an ongoing process for sure.
Now, when you say you're training the dealers, what is that? Is that everybody at a dealership? Would there just be certain people who are like, okay, we know how to use EVs and we're sort of certified EVs? Or are you making sure that whole dealership experience for a customer?
We're hoping it's the whole dealership experience because, you know, a customer may interact with anybody at a dealership. Is it the guy that does the final walk around at the car? But it's the guy who's selling it. And, you know, there could be questions that come up even in the F&I office when the transaction's happening. So you just never know when that question may come up from the customer. So hopefully it is everyone at the dealership that at least has the basic knowledge level to answer the question. And or if someone is, you know, not able to answer the question, that they have at least some kind of digital device in the palm of their hands or quick in to grab, and they can quickly look that up so that way they can get that customer that information. So we're doing all that we can to make that very rapid, so that way, you know, they seem as knowledgeable as possible in the moment. It's not perfect, but it's getting better and better every day.
It is. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with me.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your big World Car
wins.
Thank
you. We're very excited. Thank you.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. And then we've got Christian Meunier and Jim Morrison from Jeep.
All right, so let's start off. Jeep has had an amazing run over the past decade, the growth that the brand has had. The Wrangler, I think with every major brand, there's always, usually one model that is kind of the heart and soul of that brand. Ford, it's Mustang, Chevrolet's Corvette, Jeep, Wrangler.
And Grand Cherokee.
And Grand Cherokee, yeah. I mean, a bunch of Wagoneer, too. But really, Wrangler is the one that when people think of Jeep, they think of Wrangler. It's the original. And it's been interesting. The last couple of years, you've had finally had something resembling some real competition in that segment. And I'm curious your thoughts about, what it's like having some competition, and I think from what you're seeing now with the 2024 Wrangler, clearly see some impacts of that competition. How competition is making everybody better.
I think competition is good, and I think one of our driving forces has always been our customers, and we listen to our customers and stay focused on them. And a lot of the things that you see, illustrated with the new Wrangler. More capability, more technology, and more comfort. This is all stuff that they've been asking for. But for sure, it's been helped stimulate along by the competition. So at the end of the day, the product keeps getting better. If you look at the number of interventions we've made with Wrangler in the last few years, it's been at record paces. We've added 35-inch tires. We've added more capability. We've added a 20th anniversary. We've added a 4xe. We've added a 392. There's a lot going on in the Wrangler world, today's announcement is just the icing on the cake of continual evolution of the product driven by our customers.
So it's a stimulation. It's an extra stimulation. We see we have a duty, which is to make Wrangler the best of the best of the best always, because that's the icon of the brand, as you described. And the fact that there are new players in the segment is a stimulation. The good news is, at the end of the day, it also provides more visibility to that segment. More people are coming into the segment. They understand that, we've been talking about mobility for so many years, right? It's been like the fashionable word, mobility. We're not selling mobility, at Jeep. We're selling
a lifestyle. Well, you are, but in a very different form than what people usually think of.
We don't sell appliances.
Yes.
We sell a dream, we sell a lifestyle, obviously with mobility, but mobility that gets you anywhere, whenever you want. And I think it's a good thing. Competition is good. We think it's very stimulating. And most of the changes on the 24 that you have seen in the background or that you will see today was already in the pipeline. The one thing that it gives us is a little bit more stimulation to go faster, to make it happen quicker, because you have competition. You need to stay the best, the best of the best. So you're going to do it. So.
Great. So, obviously, one of the things that Jeep and Wrangler in particular, but now Grand Cherokee as well, is doing faster than anyone else in the off-road segment is electrification. We were first with the 4xe Wrangler and now the Grand Cherokee. You've got more coming in the next couple of years. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Where the Jeep brand goes from here?
So we're very committed to electrification, and I think the magic of 4xe is you make the 4x4 better. You make the Jeeps better. With 4xe, you build the best Jeep ever. You have more capability off-road. You can drive in silence in nature. Why not? And at the end of the day, the customers embrace it. We started with the Wrangler 4xe 2 years ago. We've been since then number one PHEV in North America. We introduced the Grand Cherokee 4xe at the end of last year. We're number two with Grand Cherokee in North America. So that means we have the two number one and number two spots very quickly with 4xe because PHEV, because of what it delivers to the customers. That ability to drive 20 to 25 miles pure electric, and if you charge, if you commute, if you do a little bit of off-road, you can do it pure electric or hybrid load. You have no anxiety. You have great fuel efficiency, which is not that easy with a Wrangler without it. So I think you have all the benefits that are pretty obvious. Now we're bringing BEV, pure electric next year with the Recon and the Wagoneer S. It's going to take it to another level. And the first reaction of the public is very, very awesome. You know, he was in Moab, Utah, and maybe you want to give them some perspective. We get feedback from the press, feedback from the customers, and little by little, people are getting, you know, convinced that that's pretty cool stuff. So
it is. The nice thing for us, like Christian said, is we always want to be the best in four-wheel drive capability. And now 4xe is being recognized as the best. We've had people come up to us on the trails and say, wow, that thing is more capable than any of the gas stuff running around. And it does it in complete silence. And when you do that and take your doors off and your top off, it's a unique experience that people are drawn to in addition to electrification. So it's really a unique space for us at Jeep.
Did the acceptance of 4xe surprise you at all? You know, the share of sales that you got with that version grant?
No, because I think the execution of the system is awesome, works really well, and we had no doubt that we could build a better Jeep. At the end of the day, the only thing that was a little bit of a challenge was to get people's mindset wrapped around it. But think about it. We launched it 2 years ago. We started selling 15-20% of the sales of Wrangler with PHEV, with 4xe. Now, at the end of quarter one, we're 38% with Wrangler, right? And it's going to keep creeping up. The second half will be well above 50% of the Wrangler. Grand Cherokee, after just, 4 months, we're already at 18%. So it's creeping up because demand is there, because people realize that you have the V8 performance with something really cool. You don't have a bad feel about the environment or not as much. You have great fuel economy. And honestly, I drive one. I drive a Wrangler Rubicon 4xe. I drove 3,000 miles. I went to the gas station 3 times. That's not what happened when I had a V8 Wrangler. Yeah. Right? So there's a lot of good feel about it. Good feel. I love it because of the torque you have. It's a lot of fun. It's as smooth as it can be. And if you go off-road, it's silence. Take the doors off. Take the top off. You're in nature. Basically, hear nothing but the tire.
Yeah, I remember the first time driving 4xe, driving Grand Cherokee 4xe last year.
Yeah.
In Texas, on an off-road trail with the engine off. Yeah, and all you hear is the tires crunching, the skid plate scraping over the rocks. It's quite an interesting experience. Yeah.
It's pretty magic. I was at the Rubicon last year as a customer. I was incognito, and I had a few hardcore guys in front of me, like real, and not the youngest generation. And these guys, really, they made fun of me, that thing, right? And then I said, okay, come here, try it. So they did their crawling, and then I said, okay, come over, do the same thing. It doesn't take 2 minutes for them to realize that
it's instant torque.
2 minutes.
Especially when you're crawling.
So much better, so much easier, precise, much more precise, much smoother. No need to push the throttle. Just, it's very subtle, very subtle. So it's, I think there's no inconvenience. There is no drawback with it. So
with the popularity of 4xe, has that given you added confidence about the transition to battery electric? Has the popularity of 4xe given you some added confidence that when you start launching your battery electric models next year, that they will do well, that they're going to be accepted by the public as well?
What do you think?
I think for sure. I think one thing about the Jeep customers is they've always been looking towards the best off-road capability. And what we've proven with our 4xe is 4xe is the new 4x4. And that's being understood more and more that that's the best. So this will be the taking it up one notch again.
I think the Recon, if I had to bet anything, we're going to have a year waiting list before start of production. So that's the confidence level I have. Maybe I'm going to be completely wrong, but the feedback we had from clinics, the feedback we had, we've shown it to the dealers last week in Vegas. It's overwhelming. I think the fun that product is going to deliver, the range is going to be decent. The fun that people will have with this thing, I think it's not going to be the it's not going to be for everyone, you know? But I think we're going to do extremely well. I'm confident Jeep by 2025 is going to be the number one electrified SUV brand in the world, by far. Because we're going to have an electrified offering in every single nameplate, from Wrangler to Gladiator, and the system works. It works for on-road, it works for daily drive, it works for commute, and it works off-road very well. So there's no reason why not. And I think we're going to keep ramping up without pushing. Without pushing. I think it's a pretty obvious thing that happens. The dealers are starting to really be convinced of that. When you start driving it, it doesn't take long. Do a test drive, you like it. There are not many systems like that that make you convinced that...
Yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate to have the opportunity to drive a lot of different EVs. I totally agree with you. And this is the thing that, you know, most drivers have never been in an EV so far. You know, sold maybe 2 million EVs in North America to date. You know, and there's 290 million registered vehicles on the road. So most people have never even experienced an EV yet. It's going to be interesting as more and more people get into these different types of vehicles. In Europe, you also have another EV that's already on the market,
yes.
Renegade.
And Compass.
And the Compass, yes.
Yeah.
As a 4x8.
Yeah.
How's the response been to Renegade?
So in Italy, which is really our number one market in Italy, in Europe, it's almost 50% of our sales in Europe. For a lot of reasons. Obviously, that's where we produce. That's where we've really put a lot of emphasis, a lot of resources behind it.
And it's also a market that is amenable to smaller vehicles like that.
It is as well. And just to give you a perspective, in 2022, we were number one and number two on the LEV, so low emission vehicle. PHEV and BEV included, Jeep was number one brand in electrification. Number one.
In terms of unit sales?
Sales.
Okay.
2022. With Renegade Compass.
It's something you would normally think about, you know, with Jeep.
We're number one ahead of Tesla, ahead of Volkswagen, ahead of anything else, right? So, same thing. When people try it, they like it. They understand it. And I think it's a really good technology to bridge until the whole world is ready for pure electrification with charging station around the corner, with quick charge and everything else. I think 4xe with plug-in is a very good bridge. And I think what is very clear for Jeep, and I think why I believe we have a very strong plan, is we're going to have several, a list of different technology for customers. We're not going to force BEV to everyone. It's not going to be applicable maybe in the Midwest for a period of time because there are not enough charging stations, the grid, and everything else. People live remotely and things like that. We're going to have PHEV, we're going to have some HEV, and we're going to have some BEV. And between now and 2030, we'll have a wide spectrum of offerings because freedom of choice is important in America. Right? We're not going to force people to try something because they don't want to.
People are going to have different needs, especially in this market.
And in 2030, we'll be 50% BEV. Okay. So that's a hell of a commitment, but we really strongly believe we build a plan to do that.
So you mentioned charging. You're already doing the trailhead charging at a number of locations across North America. As you start to launch the BEVs, is there any thought to, currently those are level 2 chargers, and I think they're solar powered. Is there any thought to trying to do some sort of faster charging capability for the BEVs at some of those trailheads, and maybe installing a battery pack to go along with the solar to enable a little bit faster charging for some BEV owners?
Level 3 with solar is not currently available. Like the 20 or 30 minute full charge solar doesn't work. Level 2 works well. And we're making some progress, not as fast as we would like. We would love to have them everywhere on the trail, but we're doing it step by step. Yeah,
you're right. We're continuing to look for innovative ways to get the level 3s. And our dealers are working hard now as well.
So we'll have them in every dealer. Will have level 3s. Obviously, the level 3 is going to be a lot more common than it is today. Obviously, on the coast of the U.S., for sure, more. But, you know, the federal government is really pushing hard on it, and the grid is going to be available in 2 to 3 years throughout the nation. On the trail, our responsibility is to do as much as possible for people to be able to enjoy. But the Recon will do the Rubicon Trail with one charge. That's our commitment. Engineering had the mission to do it, and they will do it. They won't run out of juice at the end of the trail. They'll be able to go back to a charging station.
Yeah. So they'll be able to do the whole trail and get
and
back to a charging station.
That was the mission.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a,
and if you can do the Rubicon,
that's a reasonable requirement. You know, if you're going to build that vehicle,
we have to.
That's the biggest thing. If you can get through the Rubicon, you can do anything.
Yeah. Okay.
Rubicon is a day and a half, right?
Yeah.
It's a day and a half. Very slow, but it burns a lot of electricity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of torque to get over.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anything else about what's happening with Jeep? You know, going back to where we started with the Wrangler, the 24 Wrangler, you've added Rubicon X. You've got a bunch of new features, full floating axle availability from the factory, factory winch availability. As you said, listening to your customers and what their needs are, and really incorporating some of those kinds of things. The trails off-road capability, talk a little bit more about those updates.
I think that's a great illustration of listening to our customers. You know, when you look at a lot of customers' off-road rigs now, they've got iPads set up so they can, because the mapping technology is so good, they can use the map to follow the trails if they don't know where the trail is. So they've even though they've got a nice 8.4 screen today, they still put a big iPad up to follow the trail. So we listen to them, and we put a 12-inch screen in a big trail. So you can actually do that. At the same time, you can monitor pitch and roll. You can clip it over to a camera. All of the stuff that they need, whether on the trail, is all there in a nice, big, integrated screen. So you don't have to download the maps. You don't have to worry about, you know, getting to the trail and not having your map because you didn't download it. We've downloaded all the Badge of Honor's trails right there, and it's really nice. That's a good example of listening to our customers and doing what they were doing, and now making it easier for them.
And the factory winch, I think, is availability is a really cool feature.
It is.
Having myself gotten myself stuck in a competitor's vehicle.
Yeah. Without a winch.
Without a winch. You know, being able to find somebody with a winch
with no cell service. Come get me.
It was a huge help.
Yeah.
So I think people will really appreciate that one. You know, for those that do go off road.
Well, you know what it does is it gives them a level of freedom, right? I mean. Because knowing that you can get yourself unstuck, you enter into a different mindset, right? Because you're not panicked about, I'm not sure what's at the end of the trail or the middle of the trail. It just gives you a freedom to go enjoy. And
if you get stuck, you get stuck. That's fine.
Pull yourself out.
That's right. Go find something you can wrap the cable around.
Exactly.
Pull yourself out.
Yeah.
It also makes you a hero when you pull out those competitor cars, too.
Yeah. Well, I was pulled out by a Jeep, so.
Don't worry.
An old XJ Cherokee.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
My lawyers are not allowing me to share this, but you will see a picture in the presentation. When there was an ice storm in Texas in January, it was all over the news that Jeep Wrangler owners were on a mission to get people out of the ditch.
Oh,
right?
Cool.
And There is a video of a gladiator pulling a semi, big time, like he's, and obviously it's not what the official towing capacity is, but it did, right? It did.
Yeah.
So
it's all about the community.
Exactly. What these guys doing, you know, obviously I've been with Jeep 4 years only. He's been with Jeep 20, he bleeds Jeep, right? He's tattooed up to here. And he's in touch with all these people. He was at S2 Jeep Safari, and all the things that our customers request are usually pretty fair.
Yeah.
And what Jim is constantly pushing me to get resource for is about this. How do we make our Jeep better? How do we listen and deliver to them? And I think we do.
Yeah.
And with that 24, I think we raise the bar, right?
Sounds like it's not just about making it better in general, but making it a better Jeep.
Yeah,
better for what Jeep is supposed to be.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah exactly.
You said it best, Sam. Yeah.
All right.
Make it a better Jeep.
Any final thoughts?
No, I think it's great to see. You know, the only other piece that I would say is the demand for Jeep is an all-time high. People can't wait to get outdoors, and freedom and adventure is on top of a lot of Americans' minds right now, and what better brand to capitalize on it than Jeep?
All right. Well, on that note, thank you very much, gentlemen.
You're right. Nice to
talk to you. See you, Sam.
Thank you.
Now we've got Mike Koval talking about the Ram 1500 Rev and midsize trucks and other stuff happening at Ram.
Yeah, it is. You got a lot of news, you know, from two brands, Jeep News and Ram.
Yep.
And especially, Ram, you showed the Revolution concept in January, and now you've got the production intent version.
Correct.
Of that. And, there's a lot that's similar, but also a lot that's different from that concept. Why don't we start off with that, go over some of the, what is making it to the production Ram 1500 Rev, and what's special there?
Well, as you pointed out, we made a splash at CES in January where we revealed the Revolution concept, which was really a glimpse into the future of the brand. I made a commitment that everything that you see from the Ram brand from this moment forward will somewhere be a direct descendant of the Revolution concept. It's kind of our manifesto. It's our ethos, right? And I think as we're launching the actual production Ram 1500 Rev today here in New York, the first thing you see is the influence from the exterior styling, especially on the front end. So you have that tuning fork design, very sophisticated but modern. RAM, I mean, this is the future of the brand look, especially from the aesthetic, very muscular stance. In terms of a lot of the features and the innovative specs that you saw on the concept, the team right now, I have a technical solution for 98% of everything you saw on that truck, lifecycle management. So we're putting a roadmap together now. So we'll start to bring in some of those features that you saw on the truck, little by little, over the lifecycle of the actual production vehicle itself. So that's concept gives you a lot of latitude to dream and to push. Will everything make it to market? Maybe not. But it shows, I think, some of the spirit at Ram and the things that we're thinking about and how Ram hopefully can make your life a little bit better. But you saw the performance statistics today, and I know we've caught some barbs and, hey, you're late, all that stuff. But I found in life it's often not the challenge, it's how you react to the challenge. And with full knowledge of what our competitors have announced, we've been able to push past a lot of those performance characteristics. So whether it's 14,000 pounds of towing, 2,700 pounds of payload, 500 miles of range, full-size pickup truck.
Yeah.
And this is the production version, right, that we start producing back half of next year.
Yeah, and, to what you said about not being first, Apple didn't build the first iPod, first MP3 player.
Great point.
Or the first smartphone.
Great point.
And, they did okay. They did all right.
Do you have stock in them?
I do not.
Oh.
Sadly, I did not do as well as that. To some of the specs of this truck, I guess from the conversations that you had, last year you started the Ram Revolution program, talking to customers.
Yep.
What did you find from talking to customers were the things that they wanted to see in an electric truck?
Very simple, very simple. And we talked, how many cities did we go to? 25 or 30, yeah, I think, over the course of the year. And I thought that was really cool. And that was one of the things that we wanted to do to differentiate ourselves. And our designers and engineers were out actually having these little fireside chats. If I were to distill all of the feedback down, it's one thing. Hey, we'll come along with it. There were some that said never, ever, 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 ever. Forget it. I don't want that. You know what? That was okay, too.
Yeah.
The one thing they said, look, we're willing to give you a try. We'll come along. But I will not compromise on the things that matter to me the most, which historically were towing and payload, and more importantly, in the future, range and charge time. That was it. That was the central message. There were some things about styling and, hey, don't make a spaceship and all this stuff, but fundamentally, trucks still need to do truck things. And that's why not only heeding that feedback, but also with full knowledge of what the competition is doing, we were able to make some tweaks, and you saw some of the performance characteristics today on the actual production truck. So,
I'm curious, from those conversations, were there a significant number of people that you talked to
that had already driven an electric truck. And at that point, there were
not many out there.
There was one and, yeah. and a small number of Rivians.
The answer is no, for that very reason. There just weren't that many. Now, the market has become more mature in the last year or so with some of the other guys coming online. But fundamentally, that was it. Look, I don't want to – electrification cannot be a compromise or a limitation. The truck still – I still needed to do the things I wanted to do. And I think – Ram has, if you think about when we've launched the, I look at Todd every time, but the all-new Ram 1500, we launched an 18 as a 19 model, we called it the DT internally. That was a complete game changer. Ride and handling, the luxuriousness of the interior. Of course, then we had the 12-inch touchscreen, which, that was game changing. Now it's table stakes, right? But everything that our fans have come to know and love from Ram, the comfort, the style, the ride and handling, we've all kept all of that. We've stayed true to who we are, just now electrified. And there are more. By the way, we're not done yet. So as wonderful as this day is today, we've been preparing for years. It's all about the battery electric truck. Two battery types, right? 168, 229, 350. By the way, I think 350 is right in the heart of the market. It's between 300 and 400 miles of range, right in the heart of the market. But if range is your thing, 500 miles, right? But with all of that said, we're not done yet. And that's why we affirmed today that we're also going to have a Ram 1500 Rev XR, which we're saving for. So more on that to follow very, very soon.
I'm really curious to learn more about that one.
It's all about the power of choice. And that's what our reservation program is about. Because you're going to use your truck differently than he is, than she is. So with that in mind, with use cases and the customer in mind, ultimately, Ram will provide a better suite of solutions. And that includes not only just the pure BEV with the two battery packs, Rev XR. We're still going to maintain our ICE propulsion system as well. I'm just putting an extension on the house. I'm staying true. I'm not alienating anybody. I still have ICE. I'm just bringing in the electrified side of the family alongside of it. So, but we've been very encouraged by the numbers so far. And looking at the IHS forecast through the end of the decade, our mix of LEVs is actually even more bullish, more aggressive than the IHS call. So we're in.
Yeah, we're more aggressive than our forecast that guide us inside for our work, too.
We're in. And if this was a proof positive that we're in, I'm not sure what is. But we're not done.
Okay.
We're not done.
So, is that the rumored mid-size pickup? No. Within the full size?
This is within the full size, the Rev XR. The mid-size you mentioned, I think credibility is really important. And going back even to Detroit last fall is when I first publicly stated my desire, because we've been talking about it forever. We know that the biggest white space opportunity for the brand growth is midsize, right? And since Dakota went away, was to bring a concept version to the dealer show that we had in Vegas a couple weeks ago. And look, I was looking for a thumbs up. I would know what that meant. Or if they threw something and hit me in the head, I would also know what that meant. And it was, you'd have to ask them, but I think virtually every dealer, if you were to talk to them, loved it. It was a resounding round of applause. Now I've got to go back and actually do it, because that was just the concept version. But
is that something we're going to see this year, maybe in public?
No, not quite. We had nothing to announce today, but this is what I would tell you. We have been talking about it for a long time, and I am personally committed, and my team is committed, that this is the leadership team that is actually going to do it. And I'll tell you, okay, Mike, you're full of shit. Why? It's the merger. It's the merger of the two companies that have given us new pathways to figuring out how to get this done. I just could never get the business case to work before.
Yeah.
I have a path now.
So with that, when you talk about those pathways, is that other markets beyond North America to sell that in?
Absolutely.
To get the scale?
And I think if you were in my shoes, I have to pull myself out of the ditch sometimes, because historically 95% of my business is in North America, and this is still our home turf.
Right. Certainly for full-size trucks.
Look at the numbers in South America, the Gulf Coast countries in the Middle East, Australia, New Zealand. Our Ram International numbers are growing. We were up 40% year over year last year. We were up 50% versus last year, 22 versus 21. I look at Jeep. I'm nowhere near them yet. They have a lot of global equity. But that's what I'm aspiring to do, is to grow the brand. My first, I would say, milestone was electrification, ushering the new era of electrification for our brand. And we're here. We're live, and we're in.
And, I was talking to Christian and Jim earlier, and I asked them this question, about whether the acceptance and the popularity of the Wrangler 4xe and now the Grand Cherokee 4xe, did that give you more confidence going forward as you start to introduce vehicles like the Rev and other products?
Without question. Without question. But I think back to what a pickup truck does, back to what it has to do, the inherent promises and commitments we all make to our customers. When we were able to crack the code on things like range and towing, that's that combined with the early reservations. We opened up our first cycle of reservations the night of the Super Bowl. 72 hours we closed it. The first model year basically covered. Got a few more based on that, so we reopened it today. That's another proof that our customers like what we're saying so far. And we when we closed it after 72 hours, Sam, we hadn't told really any. We didn't give any performance characteristics. Now they know.
Right.
Now they know. And we're not done yet. And we're not done yet. It's all about the power of choice, because I know you do something different than you do something. So we'll have the BEV with two battery packs, Rev XR, but the MCA is not far away. We have our ICE system. Power of choice. Power of choice. But all of these little things gave us their success, which they're doing great. Cracking the code on the performance characteristics gave us all the confidence that we needed, and we still have more to share.
Speaking of performance characteristics, one of the areas that sells a lot in full-size pickups is the work trucks. The lower-end work trucks, not necessarily well-equipped, not necessarily with the biggest engines, but they need the space to haul stuff. Was there any thought to doing perhaps a single motor version of this truck, something that might help bring the cost down?
Nothing to announce today, but I will say that two things. One, I'm super bullish on not only the retail versions, if you will, but I think there is an absolute use case for fleet and small business as well, and we're seeing it on the ProMaster. The ProMaster BEV, our first BEV is this fall. The interest, crazy. Why? Total cost of ownership, route predictability,
electrification makes a lot of sense.
The carbon net zero commitments that everybody's making. So that is giving me confidence also on the full-size truck side of things. Now, we will have the Tradesman, which is our work truck entry-level commercial model. And I am looking at different propulsions or different options for a lower end. Nothing to announce today. I mean, like I said, the 350, the 168 is, I think, that's right in the heart of the market, if not even at the high end today. 500 is off the charts, obviously. But I think if you were in my shoes, I have to look at everything, and so nothing to announce today, but I think the demand will be there for fleet small businesses who may need some different things.
Okay. One more question for the Ram brand, the whole. We've seen the introduction of a couple of smaller trucks in the last year that have done really well, surprisingly well, I think, to a lot of people. Is that a market that you see as an opportunity for Ram as well?
I know. It is an absolute opportunity. If you look at the transaction prices of full-size pickup trucks, not only on midsize, but even something below midsize, I have them already in South America. If I could push that button right there and bring it to the U.S. tomorrow, I would do it. Because there are some really, really cool things down there that I think we could sell today. It's never that easy. Homologation, safety, it's a bit of a nightmare. But am I looking at it? Yes. Am I interested? You bet. Do I think there's a market? No question about it.
It's just a matter of timing.
It's just a matter of timing. So, because it's not just about what we need and want here in the U.S. or more broadly across North America. Globally, again. Where else can I go? Yeah, there's some interesting markets in South.
We'll pick up with the powertrain from a Hornet, or Tenali plug-in hybrid.
It's all possible, and that's what the beautiful thing about Stellantis is, just the sharing of all these platforms and technologies. I mean, I'd love to get into Southeast Asia, to Thailand. And the metric ton market is massive there. Why can't Ram play in there? Well, we can. So we're just, looking at all the different markets and the different opportunities, and I think the Ram brand, we are built to serve those who serve their communities, family, community, hard work, integrity. Those are values, I think, that transcend barriers and boundaries. look at the international numbers. There's a real demand. People really connect with what Ram is all about internationally, and so that gives me the confidence and the basis to explore opportunities there. So whether it's Southeast Asia, enlarged Europe, wherever, global growth, right? Electrification, global growth, all opportunities, small pickups. It's going to be a very exciting. I mean, we're just getting started. Like this carefully curated Ram drumbeat of EV and tech news. Today's a big day. This is pivotal. This is a big moment for our brand and really for the company. And we're just getting started.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike.
It was a pleasure. See you. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
Is it chiefing now?
7 minutes.
Next up is Olubisi Boyle, the Vice President of Product Planning and Mobility Strategy for Hyundai.
So how's your day been?
Well, you know, I'm in a good mood because we won like 4 World Car Awards.
2 years in a row.
I know.
3 or 4 last year?
Three. EV, overall, and car. And design.
Yeah.
And for, you know, so Ioniq 5 1 year, Ioniq 6. Like, we're going to start expecting this.
Something like that. You're setting a high bar for yourself.
Yeah, that's all right.
You got to keep introducing the greatest.
I know.
So, Ioniq 6, important new product. You know, Hyundai is one of the few brands that has actually stuck by sedans.
Yeah.
In recent years, a lot of other OEMs have kind of shuffled them off into the distance, and you stuck by sedans and launched something really interesting with that car, both from a design and technology perspective. How's the response been to the Ioniq 6 so far?
Well, we just started building it for North America in February, and they're now at dealers just starting March, right? So it's you know, just out there. But to be honest, we expect to this to do well like the Ioniq 5 did. When you talk about, and to be honest, we like to refer to it as a streamlined four-door vehicle, because it wasn't like your traditional, let's call it, sedan that we tried to
do. It's not a three-box sedan.
Exactly. And that was on purpose. Like, if we go back to the whole EGMP platform, right, and start out with Ioniq 5, and he had the kind of crossover SUV, we wanted to kind of hit some key segments. The crossover SUV, I'll tell you a little bit why we want to do the four-door streamlined silhouette, and then we're going to have the large three-row SUV come in 24. And so the idea there was, let's have a platform that can produce in key segments for us, because I think that the definition of EV is basically, I want my ICE car. Some people in the car industry, we really care about the drivetrain, right? Mm-hmm. And then if your performance, you really care about things like N. But after a while, especially if there was no issue with infrastructure, as you move to mainstream, they're not going to care about the powertrain.
They just want to get in the car, know that it's going to start for them every morning.
Right, and get there. Exactly. And so that's why we wanted a platform that's going to deliver us in key segments. And if you talk about, let's call it the sedan segment, you still got about 2 million or so of those that are sold, right? And then a lot of people have abandoned it. So it really allows us an opportunity to sort of increase market share in something that's abandoned, especially when you come out with a vehicle like an Ioniq 6, because it's not a traditional sedan, number one. Number two, it's an EV, battery V, full electric dedicated platform. And we went from the Ioniq 5 at 303 AER to this streamlined silhouette to 361 AER, right? And we put all the aero treatments and body covers underneath. We have those active air flaps. We have all these moldings to sort of guide the air and reduce the drag around it. It's got the really streamlined shape. And so now you have something that gives you 360 miles. That's huge compared to even ICE, you know, in a sedan that actually looks good. It's not some kind of bubble car because it's an EV. It actually looks really nice. It's designed purposefully, not just because we had an EV to do. And so we think that'll help us also for all the people abandoning the sedan market. This is a compelling, you know, and we don't have to sell all the 2 million unless somebody, but if someone wants to buy 2 million of them.
Well, as long as you can get enough materials for the batteries.
Well, true enough.
Talking about the design of Ioniq 6 and 5 and presumably the 7 mm-hmm. as well, the SUV when it comes out, and even, the Kona, as you move into, I was just talking to another designer, as you move into this era of electrification, mm-hmm. Some of the traditional requirements that a vehicle had, mm-hmm. In terms of airflow through the front, through a grill, mm-hmm. That grill, also created the face, the brand mm-hmm. image mm-hmm. of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And as the need for that goes away, there's companies taking some interesting approaches to, okay, what do we replace this with? How do we evolve the look, to maintain a brand image? Mm-hmm. And I think Hyundai's,
you see that seamless horizon?
Yeah.
That's on the Kona that's out there. So you might have noticed, I don't know if you got a chance to see the Sonata. Mm-hmm. It's we got that seamless horizon. On our Ioniq, you got the pixelated incorporated into the lights. We started incorporating into the wheels. But there's some design treatments and themes and techniques that you can sort of blend together. The radiator grille obviously is gone on that. So then you can get creative with what you could do in the front. We've done it on Genesis. We've done it on Hyundais. Definitely on the Ioniq 5, 6, and 2B7. But then now you see it on the Kona. So I think it's again, once the people who really don't care about the drive change, as long as it functions as told, horsepower, AER, charging time, things like that, then they care about how it looks. And I think the reason why we're getting a lot of accolades and third-party recognition is because we're designing the car for people, both on the exterior and the interior. The other thing that allows us with the electrified chassis, and you don't have the tunnel and flat floor and all that, is you really get to extend your wheelbase now. So the interior is large, yet the exterior can kind of make
prioritizing it for the people.
Exactly.
Instead of a piece of hardware
yes.
that you need to move.
Because I feel early in this EV journey, it was about like, oh, this is the technology. But now when you get people who use the vehicle every day and just taking their kids to daycare or whatever the kids they're doing or trying to commute to work or whatever, then you need to make it for the people inside. That's what they're going to care about. And I think we spent a lot of time doing that. And the EV sort of chassis allows us a lot more space innovation.
And one of the things I personally appreciate is Hyundai designing to stick with some physical tactile controls in
yes.
the vehicle.
We talk about that all the time.
Not necessarily putting everything into a touch interface.
So we have just a little inside baseball. So we have these meetings, and it's us, and it's consumer experience, and it's the design guys. And, you can feel like the design guys want everything, like, flat and beautiful and da-da-da-da-da. But we actually have meetings where we all come together, and they'll be like, and last time, the people are really complaining about, like, they have to, like, search for the HVAC controls, or they have to do this. And we really collaborate, because we still want to optimize. We don't want it to be all design, and we don't want it to be all... We're not going to have all buttons either, And so we want some aesthetic, we want form and function. And I really feel we're sort of kicking on all cylinders, for old school speak, to collaborate on those pieces. And so design doesn't always win, and consumer experience doesn't always win, but we really talk it through. And I think there was a time where it's just like, we're just going to do it however design says, and it's not like that now,
Yeah, I don't know if Steve Jobs was the first one to say it, but he's the one that I'm familiar with him articulating the idea that design is not just about the way something looks, but about the way it works.
Form and function. Yeah. Form and function.
And it's all of that, and I think that's, that's really important.
That's the thing that then people really end up loving your vehicles. And because I talked to a bunch of people, even on the Ioniq 5, and you talked about that interior space and that how it seems like bigger or roomier when you get in. And people say that even about the Ioniq 6, too. And I was just like, you looked at all these EVs. Why'd you end up choosing the Ioniq 5? And they're like, we saw it from the outside, and we just thought, it wasn't going to be big enough. We just had a baby, and we're going to, put the baby seat in. And he goes, the reason why when I sat in the Ioniq 5, but I hadn't sat in it. They'd, seen thousands. When I sat in the Ioniq 5, I was shocked at how good it is. And then after that, all the ones I saw before, forget it, and then I bought the Ioniq 5. And I hear that so much, because they're fooled by that. But I think it's also because we spend all this time on space innovation and taking advantage that we have this flat floor and this electrified chassis.
I think one of the one of the interesting things from a technology perspective around EGMP was the decision to go with an 800 volt architecture.
That's a unique selling proposition.
And you know, and in more mainstream vehicles, you know,
like they have it in Porsche.
It's the only one.
Yeah, but we're democratizing EV technology. So that was a strategic, I feel really inspired, but I'm biased, decision, you know, from Albert Bierman and team to go with the 800 volt technology. Because one, it allowed us the 10 to 80% ultra fast DC charge.
So I mean, you can find a charger that works that fast. That's all.
So Sam, work with me on this. All right. So we are in the infancy of the infrastructure journey, right? But OEMs can't go, I'm not going to work on EVs till the infrastructure is there, right? So we got to do this. But 10, 15 years ago, we ain't, like, everybody's just like, why even, you know, it's impossible. And now people are considering EVs. 10, 15 years from now, the pains we're going through on, well, my charger's always broken, not maintained there. We won't be at that position. You know, maybe we'll be working on trying to get infrastructure for hydrogen or whatever the case is. Because to meet these climate change challenges, it's not going to be, a lot of people make it like a war between like battery EV or hydrogen or, and it's not. We're going to have maybe hydrogen for heavy duty, maybe battery EV for, you know, passenger cars or light duty or whatever the case may be. But we're going to need to meet these really stringent goals, you know, 50%, you know, no ICE vehicles after a certain time, 2035 and all of that. It's going to take multiple types of technologies to get us there. And so I know the infrastructure is not there today, but it's going to evolve.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that doesn't get talked about enough, you know, is the used vehicle market.
Mm.
I mean, obviously, you're primarily focused on selling new cars to consumers.
Mm.
But, you know, and obviously, new car buyers, you know, love the ability to charge very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's actually going to be even more important when you get to the used car market because, well, far more people buy used cars than new cars.
True.
And, you know, those cars stay on the road for a long time. And as you get into that used car market where affordability is even more of an issue for consumers, a much higher percentage of those consumers are going to be living somewhere where they don't have dedicated off-street parking to charge at home every night.
Mm.
And so they are going to be much more dependent on that charging infrastructure.
Mm.
And I think, I don't know how much thought, you know, Hyundai gave to that, you know, in making the decision to go with an 800-volt architecture today.
Mm.
But, you know, 5-6 years from now when a lot of these cars are in the used car market and those consumers that can't charge at home are relying on that, I think they're really going to appreciate the fact that, okay, I can go somewhere for 20 minutes and, you know...
Right, I don't have to be there for 5 hours.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly, right. So I think that's a piece of it. But, you know, the infrastructure thing, I say a lot this a lot, it's like an African term, it's also, but like it takes a village.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I mean by
it's
that...
an ecosystem.
It is, yeah. And so... one of the things, let's just talk infrastructure for a minute. So one of the things that we're exploring on many avenues is in this ecosystem where it takes a village. So there's one piece with, can we work with our dealers that, depending on where they're located, have real estate where they're willing to build infrastructure since we have a relationship with dealers and actually maybe we can work with a traditional oil company partner that wants to now have EV infrastructure and then maybe look at opportunities to partner with our dealers to have infrastructure there. There's another piece where I'm in an urban environment. Maybe there's a way to Airbnb my electricity. So if from my brownstone I connect to a charger that's here, and then Sam is in town for a minute, and he has to go by my house. He can plug into this.
Have a pedestal out on the curb.
Right.
Yeah.
But somehow, because it's in front of my house and it's still part of my brownstone or whatever, I get some money out of this, and the company gets money out of this, whatever the case may be. So that's an avenue, especially maybe in urban environments. We can get them tall and skinny enough or whatever. Then there's, you know, we have in Korea, we have these stations called E-Pit where it's our own particular network, and it's in Korea now, and they're trialing those out. And maybe is that something maybe we would want to explore, you know, in North America, and actually have a charging network that way. And then is there where we partner with a traditional oil company that now wants to go into clean energy to set up that infrastructure. And so that's what I mean by the ecosystem. We're like looking at avenues in all of those because as an industry, we're going to need that to sort of help speed up this whole.
Yeah. Is Hyundai, you know, looking at making more direct investments in infrastructure, or is it primarily through working with your partners to help facilitate, you know, like with dealers?
We're going
to
look at all those. We're kind of like exploring all those those options. Yeah, but we understand the need for it. To your earlier point, right? You know, infrastructure isn't there, and so we also want to sell our EVs. So we need to help, you know, promote that. We also need the education piece of it. Part of the reason we did the Hyundai Home thing, right, was the education piece of it, right? You know, I buy my EV, but maybe I didn't know I needed a home charger. And some people, they don't realize that,
yeah.
You know, a home charger. What is that going to do my gas, my electricity bill? And so maybe solar panels helped. And then maybe that somehow I can give it back to the grid. And then maybe there's a battery charger for when the lights go out and, you know, I still have some energy that I can use. But the key thing is, a couple of things. It gets coupled with an energy advisor that says, oh, for your house, it's 2,000 square feet. And this is the type of solar panels that this was. And by the way, in your particular town in New Jersey, these are the incentives that go with it. So you can help all of that. You can, you know, bring this along.
Another area, you know, I had somebody write to me recently, about the challenge of charging an EV if you're physically disabled, if you're in a wheelchair.
Mm.
I'm sure you've experienced, you know, handling those big thick DC fast charging cables, and, you know, looking at the way most charging stations are configured.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're in a wheelchair, and, you know, you've got an adapted vehicle, trying to get that cable, I mean, even just in many cases, like the Electrify America station that's near my home, you know, they've got pairs of chargers with a pair of parking spaces in between and on either side of there.
Mm-hmm.
There's just physically no space to get in there with a chair.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it
mm-hmm.
if you're in a chair and be able to get that cable and get it onto the end of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, Hyundai showed off a robotic charging system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that
those
something?
Are the types of things we're trying to do when we bought Boston Dynamics.
Right.
How do we bring it to sort of ease people's sort of everyday needs with robots? That was kind of part of the reasons.
Right.
Like, how do we help, you know?
So is that technology that came out of the Boston Dynamics group to do that, or?
I don't know that particular one. That might have been like a pilot thing.
Back to you.
Yeah. I don't know about that particular one. But what I do know as part of the extension of sort of going into robotics with like Boston is how do we bring those technologies to help people in their sort of everyday lives, or even in our manufacturing facilities as people are working on repetitive jobs and that type of thing. And so, and it's to help. And then we have actually as sort of a demonstration of what types of things we would do, where you see people sort of maybe being cascaded or taken out using robots, you know, helping them to maneuver from here to there. Now, also, as we increase this infrastructure journey, because right now people are putting EV chargers where they can. Like, it's not necessarily with a great plan. It's like, I have some space and I put it here, right? And so those things are going to have to be planned out, right? Like, you're going to have to, just like we're trying to deliver on the interior space of the car, you're going to have to deliver on a charging station that's a real charging station that accommodates all types of people that come. And I do believe we'll get to that point. But also in the interim, I think the types of things we want to do with robotics is to help those types of.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, there's also options like wireless charging, which Genesis has been piloting.
We have that in Korea. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that something that you're looking at potentially bringing to North America?
Well, I didn't include that one, but those are things that we would consider as well. Yeah.
Okay. One last area I want to get into is, you know, in Chicago, you announced the BlueLink Plus, you know, the next generation of connectivity for Hyundai vehicles. I know that, you know, one of, you know, as great as the Ioniq vehicles are, you know, one of the perhaps weaknesses in those vehicles has been, you know, in the infotainment system, finding charging when you're on a trip, when you're on a road trip, you know, trying to figure out where's a charger along my route.
The BlueLink routing.
Yeah, and you know, hopefully with the new generation stuff, you know, that will be better. I'm looking forward to trying that out. Last week, GM made an interesting announcement about their decision to remove smartphone projection support from their future.
Yeah, they're not going to have Apple CarPlay.
Right. They've got an Android automotive-based infotainment system, and they want to focus on doing the integration within that platform
Google one.
To create a more consistent experience for their customers. Is that something that is under consideration at all within Hyundai to maybe go in a direction like that to really optimize that built-in experience and maybe move away from the projection experience?
Well, I wouldn't say that we're moving away right at this 5 minutes. There's no decision or announcement on that. But what I would say is we're working on the digital cockpit of the future, the one that brings productivity in the vehicles, one day when we have autonomous, but even prior to that. And we are looking at all options and alternatives so that we have sort of a unique experience, just like we're trying to optimize space innovation, but kind of like on, let's call it the hardware end. From a software digital consumer experience end, we're looking at that North Star digital cockpit that we are looking at various options to see what would be best to enable that. But that is a North Star for us, to have the digital cockpit of the future that really meets the consumer needs. And so we haven't made a decision on removing or keeping Android Auto.
Trying to make it so the consumers want to use it.
There's no near term.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sam, remember in 2015 when we were first to market with CarPlay?
Yeah.
And the headline on the billboard that I made at the auto show was Freedom of Choice.
Yeah.
I think we've always kind of stood for, here's some options.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Give consumers the options,
right.
but work on making your system the best it can be, so that consumers choose that.
So I feel when you have that North Star digital cockpit, it's going to be the thing that lets the consumers do that. But there's no decision today that, like, we're dropping Android Auto or Apple CarPlay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we didn't announce the EV routing on IONIQ 6. We just, I don't know, when you get your loan.
They're doing a regional drive in Michigan in a couple
of
weeks.
Yeah, so you'll be up to experience it.
Okay.
It's connected routing with the chargers. And,
okay.
Yeah. We just talked about it like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
we were,
plots the,
we had a recent drive.
Where to charge.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, maybe better integration with the charge network operators to get that real-time data in there.
Yeah.
So the driver can know what's actually available, what's working, what speed is at.
Is there a 350-kilowatt charger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's so much opportunity to make that stuff, that experience better.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
From what we're talking about for a handicapped person.
And
so many steps.
From the OEM side and from the charge provider side, you know, and for the consumers, obviously.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of opportunities there.
Right.
And hopefully...
In the infancy of its journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're only 10 years into this, really, you know, the modern EV era.
Right.
And, you know, if you look back at the beginning of the auto industry.
We didn't even used to talk about it.
Yeah. it took decades, you know, before there were gas stations everywhere.
Right.
And I think we're so much farther along even now than we were then.
Right.
But, you know, people have gotten so used to the reliability of traditional fueling infrastructure that they, you know, they expect to have the same thing on the EV side. And, you know, if we don't deliver, then...
It'll be hard to make that transition for
them. Exactly.
Understood.
Yeah. Anything else going on at Hyundai that we haven't talked about?
Did I leave out stuff?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's a bright future.
We're feeling kind of good these days.
Yeah.
So next year you got to go for a clean sweep of all the world cars.
Don't jinx it.
And finally, we've got Mike Wild, the director of product planning and pricing at Kia of America, talking about the EV9 and more stuff.
So Mike, you're head of product planning for Kia North America. Big news here today is showing off the EV9, I guess, certainly in public in North America for the first time. This is a really important new product for Kia. Tell us a little bit more about the EV9.
You're right. It's very important. I mean, I think like I've told other people, I think it's the future of Kias. The future of Kia is, you know, being bold, innovative, and electrified. And I think EV9 is, you know, the best representative of what we're trying to do. We've had great success with the Telluride. You know, American families love the Telluride. They've also appreciated the technical excellence of the EV6, our first dedicated EV. And it's kind of the combination of the both. So we took the platform from the EV6 and a lot of the attributes that people love, the Telluride, and now we have an electrified Telluride size SUV, and it takes what we did for EV6 even to a new level. So it's like the next level of technology, connectivity.
I'm a big fan of the EV6. You know, I've driven all of the various EGMP, or almost all the various EGMP.
Including the GT?
I haven't driven the GT yet.
Oh.
But I've tried the GV60 Performance.
Okay. Probably similar.
Very similar. Obviously, very different look and feel to it, but
right.
Similar performance levels. I've driven a couple of different EV6s, a couple of the ones from Brand H over there. I think it's an outstanding platform. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how consumers in this segment, you know, the family size three-row utility segment, which is obviously a very strong segment, strong for Kia, strong overall, how they take to that. Because right now there isn't really anything electric in a more affordable price point. I mean, what the only offerings right now in this sort of size class are at the Rivian R1S, you know, Mercedes EQS, which are
expensive.
Much more expensive, yeah. So
right.
What kinds of things were you targeting in developing the EV9, you know, to make it appeal to families in this sort of segment?
Size. Yeah, so the number one reason that people are interested in that kind of car is, you know, they want to have a big enough room to fit their family, all their stuff. And also, if you take a longer trip, you know, the longer the trip, the more comfortable you want to be. And the more, you know, the bigger the car is, the more comfortable you can be. So, having the capability as far as the size. And then the other thing we've added is, you know, just like what was popular in Telluride is the safety features. And we've taken that to a whole new level. And then the advanced driver assistance. So, you know, before you could drive it somewhat hands-free, but you had to touch the steering wheel every once in a while, right, to show you're paying attention. But now we'll have a camera in the car, and you can actually not put your hands on the steering wheel at all. The camera will ensure that you're paying attention, so it's truly hands-free driving.
So it'll be a hands-free, eyes-on system that's available for North America?
Yes.
And overseas, I think they talked about a Level 3 system, which is hands-off, eyes-off. That's not coming to North America at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a technical and legal question of, you know, Level 3. So we have the systems in the car between the LiDAR, the radar, and the camera. We definitely know what's going on the road, but trying to synthesize that and making sure that, you know, I think the difference between level 2 and level 3, level 2 is driver assisted, and level 3 is, you know, basically no driver.
Right.
And that puts all the liability on the OEM, right? Mm-hmm. If you say, you know, we don't need you there at all, and there's so many different scenarios. And a lot of buyers, what we found in the research is they're more comfortable being somewhat involved.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're still, especially for a vehicle like this, you know, family vehicle, safety is number one. And I think the driver's still going to want to be involved.
Okay. So EV9 is going to be the first product in North America from Kia with that hands-free capability. What sensors are you using? You mentioned LiDAR. Is that only for the Level 3 system, or will that also be on the North American version that's eyes on?
It'll be on North American. Yeah,
okay.
It's called Advanced Highway Driver Assist. So we have HDA2, and then we have this new. We actually haven't officially named it yet. It's still kind of in process, but Advanced Highway Driver Assist. And basically what it does, like I said, is, you know, you won't have to touch the steering wheel. You can, you know, change lanes. You can go on and off the off ramp. So as long as you're on a mapped highway, it takes what we've already done with the Telluride. So you can change lanes and takes it to even a higher level.
So, excuse me, as far as capabilities, Will it have like a lane change on demand or an auto overtaking capability as
yes.
part of that suite?
Lane change on demand, auto yeah. overtaking. You know, we've already added into most of our cars like junction turning and, you know, when you're going through an intersection, which is where most serious accidents happen, it'll actually stop it. But it adds, you know, if you've got someone, yeah, like you said, oncoming, someone coming at you, or even if someone like moves over in the lane next to you, it'll move you over in the lane, like over to the edge,
right.
or change
yeah,
lanes.
Nudge you over
if
a little
it needs
bit, give
to.
You a little extra clearance.
Yeah. Yeah. So if it judges you need to make an evasive maneuver, and that's better than hitting the brakes, it will make the evasive maneuver for you.
Okay. For the hands-free capability with the maps, roughly how many miles of roads will be available for hands-free operation?
I should know that, but I don't remember the exact amount. It was like, I don't know, many thousands of miles, and they keep expanding it. I'll have to check.
Okay.
I can get back to you on what the,
all right. yeah,
the number is.
And the LiDAR, what type of LiDAR are you using, if you know?
I don't know the brand
okay.
of the LiDAR. I can look into that, though. I can
okay.
get you that information.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it.
But we have
that.
Two LiDARs in the front.
Okay.
In that system, it also has...
the lower front corners? Or?
Like kind of mid bumper.
Oh, okay.
Just on the other side of that
okay.
that little strip in the middle.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. And then we also have like a rear microphone.
Okay.
So like if a siren's
for
coming,
emergency
like
vehicles,
he'll know emergency vehicle's coming and, you know, pull over. It's also got the ultrasonic sensors on all corners. It has side-looking radar, so not just front and rear, but also sideways-looking radar. So that's the one that'll tell you, you know, who's next to you. So that's the biggest advancement is cars in the past, you know, they would look in front of you mostly, but now they see to the side and also to the rear.
Okay. For the HMI, the human-machine interface part of it, you mentioned driver monitor camera to make sure you're watching the road. What other sorts of things have been implemented on the EV9 to help the driver be aware of what mode it's in, when they need to put their hands back on the wheel, take control?
Well, most of those vehicles, I think all those vehicles will come with a heads-up display.
Okay.
So a lot of that is shown in the heads-up display.
Okay.
And then it also, you know, has a series, you know, like it'll give you a warning, it'll give you an audible signal. It actually, the steering wheel will vibrate.
Okay.
Yeah, to let you know, like, you better do something.
Okay.
Yeah, so it has several levels of warning before it actually take an action.
Okay.
Yeah, and then a lot of it will be displayed on the heads-up display, and then also in the center cluster. And then, like I said, it has feedback through the steering wheel and audible and visual warnings.
Okay. Going back to the electrification part of it, which is kind of the core of EV9, what sort of range can we expect to see with the North American market versions of that?
Right now we're targeting 300 miles,
okay.
which is pretty amazing for a vehicle that size. So even though it's pretty huge, I mean, at least mm-hmm. for, you know...
And it's roughly the same
like
overall size
markets,
as a Telluride.
Same size.
Longer wheelbase, though.
Yeah, but it does have... So Telluride, its drag coefficient is 0.34, mm-hmm. which is good, but it's 0.28, which
oh.
is amazing.
Yeah.
So it's actually better than the Range Rover, which was claimed as the lowest drag coefficient of any luxury SUV.
Yeah.
So and I think that helps with the range. And then we've got like fourth generation batteries, which are denser. You know, they've got more nickel in them, and they put more cell packs inside the cell. We expanded the wheelbase to 122 inches from the yeah. Telluride's.
That fourth generation battery, is that a step forward from what's in EV6?
Yes.
Or, okay.
Yeah, that was the third generation,
okay.
and now we have the fourth generation. So it's like with cars, keep moving ahead.
And it's still that 800 volt architecture, 230,
same.
40,
that's right.
40 volt,
yeah. So you can,
or kilowatt charging.
You can charge it from 10 to 80% in less than 25 minutes.
Assuming you can find a charger that's actually functioning properly.
That's a problem. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That is
but,
a problem.
Yeah. One of the few issues I had with the EV6 is when you are driving. Trying to find chargers in the infotainment system. When I was took a drive last year from Detroit to Wisconsin, and you know, it was trying to point me back at a charger that was 80 miles behind me.
Which oh
was
yeah,
not very helpful.
That's annoying.
For EV9, has that been updated at all? Is there a new generation of the navigation to help you find charging along your route?
They have a new system, and I completely agree that. it's a family vehicle. People are going to be taking road trips, and people want to have confidence that they're going to be able to get where they're going. Mm-hmm. And if they need to stop the charge, it needs to be directing them towards the act, you know, a station that's available and, you know, on their way. So they do have a new system. I haven't used it yet, but integrated into the navigation that does exactly that. We'll continually update how much range you have. So it's much more accurate as far as the range. And it also will tell you, you know, which stations are available along the route.
Okay. What kind of towing capability will the EV9 have? Because, you know, obviously, you know, some people using this type of vehicle, like, you know, want or need to tow.
Yeah, 5,000 pounds, okay. Believe it or not. So that's, you know, Telluride standard towing capacity is 5,000 and X-Pro is 5,500. Of course, it does degrade the range.
Sure. You know,
just like in a gas car.
Yep.
Yeah, but you can tow with it.
Okay. Excellent. When is the EV9 going to be available in the U.S.?
I think production starts in September, so I think we're saying fourth quarter.
Okay.
Fourth quarter.
And initial production is going to be in South Korea, correct?
Correct, and then next year, that's right, we start building them in Georgia.
Okay, and West Point, same place where you built other Kia vehicles. Okay, fantastic. Do you have any information yet on kind of the price range for EV9? You know, what can consumers expect to be looking at?
I mean, like all Kias, we pride ourselves on our value and affordability. Certainly is going to deliver a lot for the money. We don't know exactly what we're going to charge. I mean, obviously we want it to be less than $80,000 because we have that IRA limit of $80,000, and we want to be competitive with everyone else. And, you know, you've got the Cadillac Lyriq out there and, you know, good values. So, you know, I'm actually in charge of pricing for Kia, too, and it's very challenging with, you know, Tesla lowering prices, raising prices. You know, first Ford, you know, continually raised prices, and then Tesla lowered prices. So we'll be competitively priced. We're not exactly sure where that's going to be, but it'll be a great value. I don't know yet what exactly the number will be.
What do you see as the key competitors for the EV9?
Initially, really, there are, like you said, there's really no other three-row electrified vehicles of that size. You have the Model X, which is a lot more money. You have the Rivian, which is a lot more money. So we really don't, and I guess the EX90 will be out soon.
Uh-huh.
That'll also be quite a bit more money. So initially, we really won't have much competition. So if you want a three-row family SUV, we'll be, you know, your one choice. And it's going to be... This is a mainstream vehicle, and we feel like for EVs to be successful, this is where we have to be successful.
Okay.
We have to attract mainstream customers.
All right.
And it'll be priced appropriately.
Okay. One other question going off in a little bit different direction. Last week, GM made an interesting announcement about their strategy around infotainment on their EVs, on their new EVs. Just continuing support for smartphone projection for Apple CarPlay and Android Auto.
Yes.
Their systems are built around Android Automotive, so it's got support, got the Google Play Store and everything built in, and you can download Android apps on there. But what do you see as Kia's strategy going forward? Is that something that Kia might do in the future, you know, moving away from projection and focusing on the internal interface to try to ensure that it's more consistent for owners, as, you know, the argument that GM makes?
You know, I'm an OEM guy, so of course I want everything to come from Kia.
Sure.
You know, so yes, is that the direction we would like to go? Yes, but I think the first thing is the customer, what the customers want. Customers love their phones. They love having the Android Auto and the Apple CarPlay. Most people have Apple. So people love, you know, having that familiarity of the same system. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to, just like that navigation distance to empty function with the EV, is we're trying to add value to our system so people will want to use that system. But we're not in a position to tell people we're not going to provide you with Apple CarPlay, even though that can be difficult to work with sometimes because, you know, we have different technologies and trying to make them work together is a challenge. But we... plan to continue to offer Android Auto, Apple CarPlay, and just continually enhance our system. So hopefully the Kia navigation system is the one that people will use, but by choice, not because we're forcing them to.
Okay, good. Any other final thoughts on the EV9 or electrification in general at Kia that listeners should be thinking about?
I think you have to get in the car and drive it and experience it. I mean, we've updated everything, so I've been in the automotive industry for a long time, and the exciting thing is the newness of a new car. And when we make a new car like we make the EV9, everything is new. The IP is new. We have a different kind of glove box. You know, this is like a traditional glove box. We have a new drawer-type glove box.
Slides up.
We not only have ambient lighting, but you can have different lighting at the top and the bottom, and you can select all the different colors. The lights, like for the reading lights, are dimmable. Uh-huh. You know, so all the way throughout the car, from the storage capabilities, we have USB-C connectors. Everything has been redone, and I think the one advantage Kia has, because we don't have a luxury brand, is we don't have to hold anything back. Like, we don't have a luxury brand that we need to save features for. So we put everything, the best that we have available in the vehicles, and I think customers appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay.
And you're buying a brand new car, you know, you want to have the latest and the best technology, and that's what you'll get when you get Kia.
All right. Great. Thank you very much, Mike.
Yep.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Yep. Good to talk to you.
All right. Thanks, everybody. And we will be back next week with a fresh show.